flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
There's one thing that will forever change the way you sleep, and it's the softest, 100% organic cotton bedding from Boll & Branch. You'll fall asleep faster, wrapped in the most luxurious comfort. You'll never sleep hot again with airy blankets, cloud-like duvets, and breathable sheets. You'll experience pure comfort on night one and feel your bedding get softer with every wash. Discover the difference with 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com with code ODYSSEY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Okay, business leaders, are you playing defense or are you on the offense? Are you just, excuse me, hey, I'm trying to talk business here. As I was saying, are you here just to play or are you playing to win? If you're in it to win, meet your next MVP, NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is your full business management system in one suite. With NetSuite, you're running your accounting, your financials, HR, e-commerce, and more, all from your online dashboard. One source of truth means every department's working from the same numbers with no data delays. And with AI embedded throughout, you're automating manual tasks, plus getting fast insights for your next move. Whether you're competing on your home turf or looking to conquer international markets, NetSuite helps you get the W. Over 40,000 businesses have already made the move to NetSuite, the number one cloud ERP.
Right now, get the CFO's Guide to AI and Machine Learning at netsuite.com/special. Get this free guide at netsuite.com/special.
Okay, guys.
Nielsen, we have a podcast.
Diving deep into all things Texas, both on and off the field. Here's Sean Pendergast. Welcome to Utopia.
Hey, everybody, welcome in to a mailbag edition of the Utopia Football Podcast, our first episode this week. As I record this, it's Wednesday, right around lunchtime. Just got finished with a nice meal at Beck's Prime with my good friend Brandon Scott, who is the digital guru of Sports Radio 610. Had a nice pre-Super Bowl lunch discussion with him. He is part of the crew that will be heading to New Orleans from Sports Radio 610. There's 10 of us headed there, all six hosts. Figgy Fig is going, B. Scott's going, our boss Parker, and our engineer Aaron Raybould. We are all headed there on Sunday, and so we're going to have coverage. This podcast, I'll do this podcast, actually record probably a couple of episodes from New Orleans on Radio Row next week. So very much looking forward to that. In the meantime, we've got a mailbag episode to get to here on a Wednesday, and we've got some Texan stuff to get to. The OC search is on. You guys have questions about that in the mailbag. Certainly that we'll get to. We'll probably dig deeper into the Super Bowl next week, more so than this week. I don't know how. I'm very curious. If you guys want to interact with me either on Twitter or via the email, houmailbag@gmail.com. If you're watching on YouTube, you see it right at the bottom there, houmailbag@gmail.com. I am curious if there what the appetite is for Super Bowl coverage on this particular Houston Texans podcast, just based on how sick people seem to be of the Chiefs, that this is a matchup that we've already seen a couple of years ago, and that Philadelphia ain't exactly the most likable group in the world either. So I'll probably share some thoughts on the Super Bowl next week and maybe from a Texans angle on some of these, because there are a lot of former Texans, both on the field, coaching staff, front offices that that have Texans ties that we'll get to. But for now, probably the biggest things going on right now with the Texans, the offensive coordinator search. As we sit right now, three candidates have been interviewed, with one set to be interviewed. By the time you listen to this podcast, they may have well interviewed Nick Caley, the passing game coordinator for the Los Angeles Rams, who actually has some ties, probably more so than any of the three candidates interviewed so far, other than Gerard Johnson, who's obviously on the staff right now. But Jeff Nixon, the Syracuse offensive coordinator, has interviewed. He's an intriguing candidate. For me, an intriguing candidate just based on how he turned Kyle McCord into a really good quarterback at Syracuse last year. Thad Lewis, who is actually a former Texans player for a year in 2014, former quarterback, who is the Tampa Bay Bucks quarterbacks coach right now. I don't have a strong feeling one way or the other on him. And then Nick Caley, who I just mentioned, went to John Carroll, like Nick Caserio, was a Patriots employee, like Nick Caserio, was actually a Patriots employee from 2015 through 2020, like Nick Caserio. So there's some ties there with Caley. And so we'll see how that goes. He's not been, to my knowledge, not been a play caller because he's, you know, been, he wasn't in that position with the Patriots and with the Rams, obviously Sean McVay runs everything. So that's where we are in the candidates right now. From the sense I get is Chip Kelly is the one that most people are hoping for. That's the one I know Seth was all over the day after they fired Bobby Slowick. Seth, the thing he liked about Chip Kelly the most, which made a lot of sense, was Jeff Kelly hired Jeff Stoutland as the O-line coach in Philadelphia. And Jeff Stoutland is still, to this day, through multiple regimes, the O-line coach in Philadelphia. Hired a really good O-line coach in his 1 year in San Francisco as well. I believe Flaherty is his last name. So the point being that my feeling on the offensive coordinator has been that this position, this hire, needs to be like inextricably tied to the hire of the O-line coach as well. Like, this can't be something where you hire the OC and now we conduct this long search where we're interviewing people. Like, whoever they hire needs to have a person in mind that adheres to the same philosophies schematically, you know, in terms of, you know, just the teaching of things, the communication, all those things. I felt like that was the big flaw in how the Texans had things set up the last couple of years with Bobby Slowick, the OC, and then Chris Strauser, who'd never spent any time in this system as the O-line coach. And as we learned upon the ouster of Chris Strauser, he wasn't even sure he even wanted to be here going into last season. So we need people all in. I need an O-line coach who's inextricably linked to the offensive coordinator. And I personally would like previous play calling capability or experience, I should say, as well. I think these candidates that they're looking at are all smart football people, but the ones that have not called plays, and that's my only real knock on Jerod Johnson. Jerod seems like a great dude. CJ really likes him. He's obviously very well regarded around the league based on some of the interviews he's been getting offered. Really smart and sharp guy. But I am of mind, I think a lot of Texan fans are too, I wouldn't mind seeing them move away from the system, move to something different. I think CJ is a pretty quick study. I think he'll pick it up. He picked this system up quick enough to win Offensive Rookie of the Year. So if they put some new system in place, maybe even one that's in some ways simpler than the Kubiak-Shanahan offense, I am 100% all for that. So that's where we're at with the offensive coordinator hire. You guys have questions on that that I know we'll get to. Nick Caserio and D'Amico Ryans and some of the staff are at the Senior Bowl this week. I may get a guest on to talk Senior Bowl and draft. We're starting to get into that part of the calendar. So I may reach out John Harris or somebody like that and have a conversation. And that's probably something good to know if you're a frequent listener to the podcast. As of now, we're going from 3 episodes to 2 episodes in the off season for the most part. I may go mailbag guest throughout the off season as best I can. So let me know what you guys think of that too. HOU mailbag@gmail.com or hit me up on any of my social media platforms about that. But they're at the Senior Bowl. I'm hoping that they are shopping for wide receivers. I am hoping they're shopping for interior offensive linemen. I am hoping they're shopping for cornerbacks, even though we've got 2 of the best in Kamari Lassiter and maybe the best in Derek Stingley Jr. They need more cornerbacks on this team. And then I'm hoping they're looking. This is supposedly a very good running back draft. I would not mind at all, especially if you're bringing in a new OC who's presumably going to be a little more innovative and creative than Bobby Slowick was. I would not mind a running back who's got some wiggle and some variation to their game. I think you kind of know what Damian Pierce is. And I'm not saying I don't want Damian Pierce on the team anymore. But I think somebody who's maybe more of a threat, other than Joe Mixon, who's obviously going to be the starter, but as the second running back, somebody who's going to be a big play threat, catching the ball out of the backfield. You know, and like I said, maybe has a little wiggle to their game. I hope they're shopping for those types of products at the grocery store known as the Senior Bowl. So there's that. Last thing, and we'll hit the mailbag. CJ Stroud turned down an opportunity to go to the Pro Bowl. I think that's very telling. I think that is a first sign that this is going to be a different offseason for CJ Stroud in terms of how much he's committed to doing things that don't directly impact his ability to be a great football player next year. he loved going to the Pro Bowl last year. He talked about going there and meeting a lot of guys, he and Will Anderson recruiting guys at least, or at least planting the seed of becoming a Texan maybe someday. C.J. Stroud had a chance to go as an alternate. He is not going to go. This is how deep they had to dip into the quarterback alternate list. How far do you have to go in the AFC to get to Drake May and Russell Wilson going to the Pro Bowl? The starter, we know the three guys named to it were Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson, and Joe Burrow. Those are the three quarterbacks that were actually voted in by the fans, players, and coaches. I'm assuming that Mahomes was the next alternate because C.J. Stroud was the second alternate. And I'm just going through in my head and thinking, okay, that means that I'm guessing Justin Herbert was probably next, right? I'm guessing Bo Nix was probably in that mix right there. I would put both of them ahead of Drake May and Russell Wilson. I'm just going through all the teams in my head right now. You know, Cleveland, no. Sean Watson was probably 25th out of 16 quarterbacks in the AFC. Tua, definitely better than those guys. So let's see, who am I missing? What division? Denver, Vegas, no. I'll put them both ahead of Aiden O'Connell. And then the AFC South, I would put them both ahead of Anthony Richardson and Will Levis and Trevor Lawrence, probably, I guess. So they were down to, like, at best, they were down to their 9th and 10th quarterbacks. They were down to their what is that? I'm doing my numbers here. They were down to their 6th and 7th alternates. What a visual that is. An adult just staring and counting his fingers. My brain is mush. So anyways, I just find that funny. So the Texans that will be going to Orlando, maybe even there already, taking their families, doing a little Disney action. I like Disney World. So does my wife. Danielle Hunter is going as a replacement. And then we know Joe Mixon is going. Nico Collins is going. Derek Stingley is going. I thought I read somewhere Laremy Tunsil may not be going, which would be on brand for Laremy Tunsil to not, you know, have to go somewhere where, you know, you got to do things involving. I shouldn't say that. Laremy had a good second half of the season. He's a Pro Bowler for a reason. He is a good player. And he stopped false starting as much in games that matter. Get two against Tennessee, but yeah, whatever. All right, let's get into the mailbag. So as you can tell, the headlines for the Texans are pretty tame right now. When they get an OC, I'll do an emergency episode of the podcast. How's that sound? So when they hire an OC, you will get a Utopia football podcast. To the mailbag we go. Chris in Richmond starts us off. By the way, you can email us at houmailbag@gmail.com. I don't know why I'm using plural nouns. It's just me. So, yeah, I have a new producer. Jared is my new producer. But he doesn't touch the mailbox at all. So, anyways, say all that to say, Chris in Richmond starts us off. I'm disappointed we had to let Bobby go, but it was the right decision. I've come up with a short list. Curious if these names are on your list as well. And he lists Mike McCarthy, Doug Peterson, and Chip Kelly. Chip Kelly's on everybody's list. Chip Kelly is on my list. Chip Kelly is on your list. He's on Seth's list. He's on everybody's list. And I'm guessing he's on D'Amico Ryan's and Nick Caserio's list as well. Doug Peterson is an interesting one. The positive with Doug, the negative is he just got fired because he couldn't get shit out of Trevor Lawrence. The positive is he did win a Super Bowl with Nick Foles at quarterback. Although I always felt like Frank Reich got more credit for that than maybe Doug Peterson did, like behind the scenes. Frank Reich was an assistant on that staff. Now, seeing how things ended for Frank Reich in Indianapolis and especially Carolina, maybe it was Doug Peterson. I wouldn't be mad at Doug Peterson being the coach. And now that he's kind of flunked out, you know, he got fired in Philly eventually, even though he won a Super Bowl. And then he got hired in Jacksonville. He got fired after just a couple of years there. That he may be in that sweet spot of guys who are going to be offensive coordinators for a long, long time that aren't going to be on the hot lists for head coaching positions. So that, from that standpoint, I guess, that's not a main criteria. I just want somebody who's good more than somebody who's going to be around a while. And then Mike McCarthy sounds like he's going to take a year off just to get massages, eat for sure. But he just took his name out of the running for New Orleans, and it sounds like he's going to take a year off and dip his toe back in the water. I think between McCarthy and Doug Peterson, McCarthy is probably more likely. They both won Super Bowls. I think McCarthy's more likely to get a job in a future coaching cycle than Doug. It just got so bad in Jacksonville for Doug Peterson, and that was with their quarterback largely healthy and active for most of that time. Just a bad look. Chris says, am I missing any other big names? Can't see them going after someone with zero experience. The team has legit Super Bowl aspirations. Needs a leader on the offensive side of the ball. What are your thoughts? I think I kind of just gave you my thoughts. I don't have a long, long hot list of guys for this position. Chip Kelly's the one that I want, and then everybody else I kind of evaluate as the Texans post that they interviewed them. Chris, I appreciate you emailing the podcast. Joe Q is in early today. He says, I want to build on last week's recap of your college curriculum to analyze our offense. Okay, for those who missed it last week, I think it was Chris in the ATL, because Chris is the one that usually asks really good non-football questions. He asked me if I had a favorite course in college, and I forget what the question was, but it was about college courses that I liked, and or no, that it was there one that I didn't like, and I tried to skip all the time, and my answer was I skipped a lot of classes, so I can't distinguish between classes that I skipped, because I skipped every class. I was really, really, really bad about going to class in college, like horrible. I would put my attendance record up against almost anybody. I would certainly put my record up against anybody who had more than a 3-point GPA in college. My GPA was pi, 3.14. So that was the question last week. I didn't like theology classes. I didn't like philosophy classes. So here we go. Here's Joe Q. Since you were a finance major, I was. I never spent one day in finance after I got my degree. Let's start with the version of Jim Cramer, buy, sell, hold. In this context, buy as a starter, sell as a hard cut, hold is a depth piece that we hope doesn't play very much. You already cut Shaq Mason on the emergency pod, so let's get your 10 to 30 second verdicts on the other six most rest. It looks like these are all offensive linemen. So buy as a starter, sell as a hard cut, hold is a depth piece. Okay, I like this. This is a good exercise. First, Laramie Tunsil, buy. It's an easy buy. I just said it 2 seconds ago. I don't need 10 to 30 seconds. It's an easy buy. He looked a little more dialed in. I think the hope with Laramie is that you hire an OC or an offensive lineman or an offensive line coach that can get through to him, that can really impart upon him like how important his role is, especially if he's going to get elected captain every year by his teammates. He needs to practice. He needs to be a leader of this team. So I just spent 30 seconds. So there you go. He's a buy. Titus is a soft buy for me because I want to see how it shakes out position wise, but I was okay with Titus at left guard. So he's not a strong buy like Laramie is. Laramie's a good football player. Titus is a soft buy for me. Jarrett Patterson is a hold for sure. I don't know if he's your starting center. I'm not sure how great your offensive line is. But for sure, hold. The fact that he can play guard and center and you can plug him in, he's a quick study because he did well as a rookie, I thought. But for what we expected, you know, as a six-round pick, I know Joe Q loves when I keep people's draft labels on them throughout their careers as if that's what they are. So I would go hold on Jarrett Patterson. Blake Fisher, I would say bye if Titus Howard is your left guard. I would say bye. And I would put it as a bye, honestly. This may be my Notre Dame showing, but I would put it not at a Laramie level strong bye, but I would put it somewhere in between Titus and Laramie on the bye side. And part of that has to do with he's only in year two. Like Titus is going into year seven next year. So like Blake Fisher, there is still a lot of untapped potential there, I think. And he's a second round pick. So that like he's viewed as a plus player for sure. Juice Scruggs, I would hold. Definitely not an anointed starter, but I would hold. Kenyon Green, I would hold right now. I mean, he costs you the same whether you cut him or keep him. If you're bringing in a new O-line coach, there's no reason not to hang on to Kenyon Green. You got a 90-man roster. So you go through drills in the spring. You go through training camp. And then if you feel like he's not worth having after training camp, then cut him. But I wouldn't sell on any of these guys right now. Now, this is before free agency, you know, in the draft. And so it's probably a more poignant conversation after that, you know, after you kind of know what the entire depth chart looks like offensive line. But as it looks right now, I wouldn't cut any of these guys. I would hold or buy on all of those. Then you got a lot of philosophy here, Joe Q. I'm going to keep it moving just because I only have so much time to do this mailbag. I may save your philosophy question for the next mailbag. So keep that in mind when you send in questions for next week, Joe Q. I like that you had finance and I like that you had philo as your two categories. I'm going to save the philo one, Joe Q. Appreciate you as always. Eric emails in. He said, I've read that Jaden Daniels has been using virtual reality at 1 3/4 speed to increase the processing time and make the game feel slower in real time. Do we know if the Texans and CJ are using this technology? Apologies if this has been answered already. No, you're good. Nobody's asked about this, and it's a really good question. I don't know the answer to that. I can find out the answer to that. I have an avenue into the general manager where I can ask. It's called my phone. So I'll find out if Nick's at the Super Bowl or Super Bowl.
Wow. What's up? I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, football fans, it's Patrick Peterson, former three-time All-Pro NFL cornerback, and now the new host of First and Pod, the podcast that breaks down every game, every week, with new episodes dropping every Monday and Friday mornings. Plus, I'll be highlighting key matchups for DBs around the league on Patrick's Corner. Be sure to subscribe to First and Pod on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Senior Bowl. Wish he was at the Super Bowl. He's at the Senior Bowl this week, but I'll find out if they're using it. I'm super intrigued by it. I'm way more intrigued by the use of technology in sports than I thought I would be. I thought it'd be way more old school about it. I love the Jaden Daniels virtual reality thing. For those who don't know, like it was a pretty big story as he was having this season that he was having this year that he uses a virtual reality, the goggles, the, what do they call it? Oculus, one of those. And I didn't realize he does it at 1.75 speed. Look, he plays like somebody who is playing virtual reality at a faster pace than everybody else. He's really good. It sounds weird to say about that Eagles game, that Eagles, the win over the Commanders in the NFC title game, 55-23. That was the most closely played 32-point win that I've ever seen in my life. If you had watched that game really deep into the third quarter and someone told you the final score was going to be 55-23, you would have said, hell no. The Commanders had the ball with 30 seconds left in the third quarter at midfield down by 11, which, you know, that's not a tie game or anything, but that's a close game still, especially when you're down by 11 and the score's 34-23. You know, not all 11-point margins are created equal. If they were down by 11, if it was 17-6, like clearly they hadn't been moving the ball all day, then I go, okay, well, the Eagles kind of have this one in hand here. But that was a back and forth, high scoring kind of game that you felt like, you know, if the Commanders could get a turnover and break serve at some point, that maybe they could win that game. But unfortunately, they fumbled three times, and that's what kept the Eagles in the game in the first half and into the third quarter was just three fumbles in horrible spots on the field. Otherwise, that was a really evenly played game. So I'm kind of going off on a tangent here about Jaden Daniels. Eric, I say all this to say I have no idea if the Texans use virtual reality, but I approve. And I'm going to write that down on my list of questions for Nick Caserio. So thank you. Thank you for that. All right, let's keep it moving here. Bobby gives me a multiple choice question. I like this. Not enough of you give me multiple choice questions in the mailbag. Step your game up. Patrick Mahomes is from Texas, and I think Andy Reid is one of the more likable people in the sport. Do you think negative opinions of these two stem from A, how Mahomes presents himself, B, the way they seem to, quote, win ugly. C, football fans rooting against the uniform. Or D, a self-inflicted swirling crap storm of A, B, and C. Or is it something entirely different? I think, okay, let's take these one at a time. The negative opinions about how Mahomes presents himself in this way. And I'm going to say yes on that one because I just think Mahomes, he's got a really corny vibe to him. He's annoying. He's got an annoying, grating personality to me. Now, obviously, that's not the case with a lot of people. Otherwise, he wouldn't be doing commercials for every company under the sun. These companies, this just in, they research this stuff to see how likable people are and then put them in these commercials. Success also helps, but likability is also a big thing. People seem to like Patrick Mahomes. I am not one of those. And I don't think he's a bad person. He's, by all accounts, he's a great person. Perhaps a much better person than his dad, but who seems to have made driving drunk a hobby. But I just find him corny and annoying. So that's one. Like, I just don't need that in my Super Bowl, and it's there every year now, right up in your face. So A, for sure. I'm not mad about the way they win, like that they win ugly, that they win close games. That's actually incredibly admirable. That they've won 17 straight one-score games is fucking amazing, really. And it's a testament to how well-coached they are more than anything else. Football fans rooting against the uniform, I would say it's a combination for me. It's a combination of A, Mahomes, and something else entirely, which is the luck that they get. So maybe winning ugly, maybe it's kind of what you mean by B, Bobby, but I don't view winning one-score games and then just this incredible luck that they have with the rep. Every referee call seems to go their way, every crucial referee call. I know people will hit us with penalty numbers. No, look, they still get penalized a lot. Take a look. At crucial junctures in games, the most important calls always seem to go the Chiefs' way. Always. In this playoff, it's been both games. There were two or three borderline controversial calls, borderline slash controversial calls in the Texans-Chiefs game. In the playoffs, they both went against the Texans, and they were big. In the win over the Bills, there were two calls that were reviewed, could have gone either way. One was the prayer deep shot to Xavier Worthy that looked like it hit the ground. The second was the fourth and one, Josh Allen sneak. It was called short of the line. Those are borderline calls. They were both massive calls, and they both went the Chiefs' way. That's the biggest thing for me. And there's just certain aspects about the Chiefs. Like, I think the Andy Reid likability thing is a complicated one for me because he is, in the Chiefs as an organization, really, they're at the far end of the scale of look the other way at the off the field stuff. So that makes Andy Reid a little less likable. I'm not saying the Texans are perfect by any means, but they skew way more towards the end of, like, we do take the off the field stuff very seriously. I don't think the Chiefs do. And that's neither here. I know for a lot of you you don't care. It's just football. But Andy Reid is portrayed as this jolly old fella who's just this great dude. And then, you know, like, you got Andy Reid's son who, you know, he's out driving drunk and he gets out of jail early, put a girl in a coma and this and that. Is that Andy Reid's fault directly? No. But, like, it does eat away a little bit at the jolly old Andy Reid. Ah, shucks, he's such a great dude and everything else. For me, some of you may think that's unfair, and as is your right. But so it's a combination of all that and just the general, like, I'm just tired of them. I'm not somebody who is required to see greatness. You know what I mean? My life will not change at all if the Chiefs are able to three-peat in the Super Bowl at all. So I'm not invested in that. And so then it comes back to, I don't want to see them three-peat because I'm not a fan of theirs. You know what I mean? So that's a long answer to your question, Bobby. And while I'm encouraging multiple choice questions, I realize I just went all over the map there, but, appreciate you. Appreciate the question. All right. BK's got a classic BK long email. Let's see what we can do here. Texans season is over and the goddamn Chiefs made the Super Bowl. Good start, BK. So this is my official Utopia list of quality sports distractions to try to help everyone ignore the fact that there's only one football game left until the fall. And the refs already threw a flag on Philly for roughing the passer. That's funny. Insert the sound effect of Sean opening a beer. I'll give that to you. BK. There's plenty of room on the University of Houston men's basketball bandwagon. I'm going to use this as a topic on the show, BK. This is good. Stuff to do now that the Texans are knocked out. There's only one football game left. Get on the U of H men's basketball bandwagon. If you haven't seen Samson's team play, they just hung a legendary L on Kansas at Kansas. They did. They were down 6 with 18 seconds to go. They won the fucking game. It was amazing. They play defense like Ed Gennaro played defense. They play like goddamn wild men, like raging, rampaging beasts. That's a good one. All right, number two. The Rockets are good. The Rockets are good. Amen Thompson plays like he went to the University of Houston. They're not getting tired of winning. It's a hell of a young squad, and we all say amen. Good job. Way to use the pun. It's directly available to you right there, BK. I admire you using that pun. Amen Thompson, up to and including not being a great shooter, he plays like he went to the University of Houston. Good call. Number three. Are we all just waiting for Chip Kelly to get to Houston? Does he need a place to crash for a few days while he looks for an apartment? Restaurant recommendations, anything else I can do to help, let me know, D'Amico. That's number three. So reasons number three among the quality sports distractions, it sounds like, is the Chip Kelly watch, for sure. Yeah, if he needs an apartment, my apartment building has a history with the Texans. Charlie Heck used to live here. He may still live here. He's been in Arizona all season playing football. His wife was in the building not all that long ago, so he still has his place. Martellus Bennett lives in this building that I'm in. I saw his brother Michael must be visiting. He was in the gym yesterday. He was on the treadmill in front of me while I was doing the elliptical machine. So that was cool. And their dad, Michael Sr., is a loyal Sports Radio 610 listener. So yeah, man, I would take it a step further and say, Chip Kelly, if you need an apartment, I will help you find one here. And if you put me down as a reference, I get $1,000. So there's that, Chip, if you're listening right now. Could use the grand, all right? All right, number four for BK, distractions. We aren't in Jacksonville. That's all he says. That's true. Duval. That's my impersonation of Liam Cohen saying, Duval. Number five. I'd like to thank the Astros and Alex Bregman. That's a good one. For this offseason telenovela. This would make a much more enjoyable HEB commercial than this real-life roster drama. Shout out to Presley for being nothing but classy and a huge postseason badass. Altuve in left field, so much drama. Adios mio. I hope I pronounced that right. I'm going to get back to the Astros here in a second. Let's open the last beer for BK's six things. Prediction, John Runyon remains a punk-ass bitch and is still suspended for 3 games. Appeal ignored. Yeah, BK suspended Runyon for 3 games on this podcast. The Astros thing is interesting. I get the sense with Dana Brown that he has minimal desire to bring Alex Bregman back. And some of it probably has to do with money. He's the one that has to manage the competitive balance tax. Some of it for me would be, bro, we gave you this offer and you're still sitting out here. The Astros need to pick a day and pick a day soon where they got to take this thing off the table. Just make him shit or get off the pot. Because he is using you right now. So don't get used. Because I think he wants the most money. I don't think he's like doing everything he can to try to be an Astro. And I'm not mad at him for it. Except the more this goes on, I'm starting to get mad at him for it. I don't want to get mad at Bregman. His salsa is horrible. But I like him as a player and a person. Like, his salsa is really bad. But he's a good baseball player who's been a key part of a lot of happiness in my life. So then keep him great. If Jim Crane's willing to spend the money on the luxury tax, knock yourself out. That's your money, not mine. But the fact of the matter is, if they go over the competitive balance tax, you know, you can forget about bringing in another big name anytime soon, certainly this year, because of all that dead money they're carrying around from all the shitty contracts they gave out. So that's my feelings on the whole Bregman thing. You know what article I would read if someone wrote it? I'm trying to think who would be the best person to write this. Someone is probably Chandler Rome, actually. Chandler would do a good job with this. If somebody did like a power ranking, I don't know if Chandler's into that type of stuff. Like a power ranking based on subjective importance with some stats mixed in or whatever, just power ranking of all the golden era Astros. Like, I'm talking literally like 1 through 100. Like, everybody who's been part of this whole run here, like, rank them 1 through 100. And I say that because I was thinking to myself, yesterday, after the Presley trade, when I was listening to all the Dana Brown audio, I was thinking, like, where does Presley rank And he's probably, in terms of importance in this stretch of great baseball, you know, I'll call it 2017 through last season. Through last season, because now, like, not going to the ALCS, like, Bloom is off the rose. So from 17 through last season, I'm thinking Presley, especially if you played a really crucial role in one of the two World Series, like McCullers did in 17, like Presley did in 22, where he was incredible coming out of the bullpen. That, I think, increases your grade. Like, if you were really important in a World Series year, Presley feels like he's, like, borderline top 10 most important Astro during this era of Astros baseball. Am I off base on that? I mean, like, because you obviously got Altuve, Bregman, Correa, Springer, Yuli, I'll throw Pena in there because he won a World Series MVP. You know, I would be violating my own rule, but he was only part of one World Series. Jordan, boy. Tucker's a complicated one because he wasn't a great postseason player, but I'll throw Tucker in there. And then I haven't even touched on the pitching staff yet. So you got Justin Verlander, you got Christian Javier for sure. Framber's complicated because he's good one year and shitty the next, good one year, shitty the next. Is it windshield wiper? So we're already at 10 right there. I don't know. Like Presley is, like, to me, clearly, and I know I'm leaving guys out, you know, like Gerrit Cole's a better pitcher than Ryan Presley. Ryan Presley has been far more important to the Astros' success in that window of time than Gerrit Cole was, you know, stuff like that. I'm thinking Presley might be top 10. He might very well be top 10 most important Astro of that era. That's a good topic too. All right, let's keep it moving. We got a few more to get to here, and then I'm going to go get on the elliptical and see if I can run into Michael Bennett again down there. Jason and Leander has three questions. Do you think Stephon Diggs will be on the Texans next year? I don't know. Gun to my head, I'm going to say yes. If it was a bet and it was even money either way, like minus 110 either way, I would bet yes and not feel good about it. I wouldn't bet it at all. But if I had to bet, I would bet yes. But I don't feel great about it. Super Bowl total sits at 49.5. Would you go over or under? I would go over. I would go over that total. Kansas City seems to have figured things out offensively. Saquon Barkley is a threat to take it to the house every time. I would go over 49.5 with these two teams. Who do I think will win the Royal Rumble, men and women? I mean, I'll tell you, one of the things, I have not paid super close attention to WWE coming into the new year. It's just, it hasn't been at top of my radar. It will be. I mean, my wife and I are staying home on Saturday night. It's my last night before I leave for New Orleans for a week. And I'm telling her we're staying home to watch the Royal Rumble. Fortunately, she's a wrestling fan, so she's cool with that. I would say it seems like I saw some odds, and John Cena's like even money to win it. And I know they're trying to get Cena into the WrestleMania storylines. So I'll go Cena on the men's side. And then I know that Charlotte Flair is getting a lot of love right now. I know I'm picking the same people as you, Jason. I'll go Cena and Charlotte Flair. That'll be fun. France in the North. Is in first, even though his run as president was short after taking over for Jamie Roots, RIP. What are your thoughts on Greg Grissom departing the Texans? I'm a little sad because I like Greg. Greg's a great dude. I think Greg took over the team at a really, really tough time to take over business operations for a football team. And I think I would echo what Cal McNair said in his statement announcing Greg's departure from the organization, that Greg did a lot of really good things on the business side. I think people really liked working for Greg Grissom. So I think, you know, if we're talking about, and he was in that building for a long time before being president. Like, if you're, you know, if you're writing the history of the Texans on the business side, obviously you can't write it without Greg Grissom. He was the president for a few years, but even before that, his work in corporate development and things like that. I don't know how much these are things that someone listening to a football podcast cares about, but just know that he was good at his job. He did a lot of really good things. He was a pleasure to work with. He'll do something great in his next chapter. And I'm very anxious to see what Mike Tomlin does as the next president. He comes in with a dynamite resume. I watched a few interviews of him. I'm really, really impressed. I don't think it's an accident that Cal McNair mentioned stadium development in the first, or like the third sentence of the press release, the quotes from Cal about Mike, mentioned stadium development. And that when they tweeted out that they'd hired Mike Tomlin to be the president, that it wasn't a picture of Toman, it was a picture of the stadium. I don't think that's by accident. I think that's, and I don't think it's a metaphor or anything. I think it's a message is what it is. So I think Toman's being brought in, not wholly stadium wise. Like he's going to have all those same functional areas underneath him that Greg did, but there's certain types of leaders that you need through different areas of an organization. And I could very well see, I've not talked to the McNairs about this, but I could very well see that going through this next era of Texans football, that you would need somebody who's got a lot of experience in stadium functionality, stadium development, building of stadiums, or at the very least renovating of stadiums. NRG Stadium needs a lot of work, and it's a lot of expensive work, and I'm sure nobody wants to pay for it right now. The Texans probably don't. The county probably doesn't, but someone has to. Someone will, and they all realize someone will, and they may be part of it. Maybe it's a partnership in paying for the whole thing. But you need somebody with that deft kind of hand. And for those who don't know about Mike Tolman's background, his company that he's been a C-level executive for several years now has extensive experience working turnkey solutions with big stadiums, professional sports teams on the marketing and stadium operations side. Like, he's very experienced in this. So while the question was about Greg Grissom, and I loved working with Greg, I'm excited to see what this next era is for the Texans as far as business operations goes. That part does intrigue me. I don't know how much it intrigues the average football fan. And the Texans are a partner of the station. So kind of everything that they make decisions about when it comes to stuff like this, either directly or indirectly, affects Sports Radio 610 as well. Franz in the North has a couple more questions. Damian Pierce showed some moments here and there. Do you believe having a new OC can help him be a viable number two behind Joe Mixon, or is he too far gone? I think some of it will depend on the scheme they bring in. Look, a big reason why Damian kind of lost his mojo is he got this scheme flummoxed him for some reason. He was just, he never really wrapped his brain around. I'm not saying this is an intelligence issue with Damian Pierce. Like I'm talking about the whole football ethos. Like he was more comfortable running in a different scheme that's just much more power, you know, find a hole, run through it, run over people, run with bad intentions. Like, I just don't, like, Damian just never got there. Even when he's running for 176 yards in the Titans game, the team spoke. Like, he carried it three times in the playoffs or whatever. Well, you know what I mean? Like, the team never really got confidence, I think, in Damian in this system. I know Nick said on our show when he was asked about it by Seth, they're like, well, we got one of the best backs in the league. You know, why would we take carries away from him? I think there's a lot of teams that would split the carries more evenly if they had a better running back, you know, behind Joe Mixon, or at least one that better in this scheme. Damian Pierce belongs in the NFL. Like, that much is clear. He belongs in the NFL. So if they bring in, like, say they bring in Chip Kelly, who doesn't run the Kubiak-Shanahan system, like, I think Chip Kelly can probably find a way to unlock some, or reopen some things with Damian Pierce. Last one from Prompt in the North. Do you feel like Derek Stingley got overlooked for not being named at least one of the finalists for Defensive Player of the Year? Here's the thing about that. These awards are all about narratives. The narratives get created early in the season, and it's really hard to make a late run at things. Derek Stingley Jr. was not on the board, I don't think, at the beginning of the year. If he was, he was way down the list for Defensive Player of the Year. And he really didn't start doing things that would get you on the radar for it until, like, week 15, really, the Dolphins, those two. I know he'd been having a good year to that point, a solid year, like a good year. The advanced stats love Derek Stingley, and he had a few picks earlier in the season, but it was that Dolphin game is what really, you know, got him on the map. If he had that Dolphin game back in, if he had the last 6 weeks of the season in weeks 1 through 6, Stingley would have been a finalist. That's the thing. These awards have an ebb and a flow to them. And if you're not on the radar early in the season and have a little bit of room to a little bit of cushion, and I say on the board, I'm talking the odds board. You know, that's what I'm talking about, like the odds. You know, I don't know who's winning the award. TJ Watt has been the favorite all year. TJ had a horrible end to his season this year. I don't think he registered a stat in his last nearly 200 snaps of the regular season. And yet he's a finalist because he'd been sitting up there all year as the favorite from jump, you know? So that's what these will. Derek Stingley Jr. will come into next season, I guarantee you, in easily in the top 10 on the odds board for Defensive Player of the Year. That's my prediction. On the odds board, for the, you know, I know there's multiple odds boards, but let's just call it, you know, if I took six of them and combined them into one big odds board, Derek Stingley Jr. will be top 10. He will be. Appreciate the email. France in the North. Chris in the ATL, last one. Sean, does the firing of Bobby Slowick warrant a breaking news episode? Give the Utopians what they want. Well, Chris, I'm glad you asked. I'm only bringing this up. I'm not picking on you. I did do an emergency episode. And I know, Chris, you probably know this because you probably sent this email because you're a loyal fan. You're probably like 2 minutes after the news broke. You're like, you know whose opinion I need? Sean's. And you're like, do an emergency episode. And guess what I did? An emergency episode. If you missed it, Chris, or anybody else, it's up. So you can get my initial thoughts right as it happened of Bobby Slowick getting fired if you go to your podcast feed. If you're not getting these podcasts sent to your email, it's because you haven't subscribed. Subscribe, rate, and review the podcast, man. Do that, please. More from Chris here, and then we'll wrap it up. While I don't want anyone to lose their job, this was definitely the right move, firing Slowick, and justified. To any fans who started doubting D'Amico's competency, they need to realize this move shows he's the guy to take the Texans to the top. Let me stop right there. No one was questioning – well, I don't say no one. By and large, people weren't questioning D'Amico's competency. I'm pausing to say no one because there's always somebody out there on the fringe of any bad opinion. I think what I was questioning, only because he hadn't been put to the test yet, was his constitution. You know, like his – can he fire friends? Is he too nice? And I'm not saying he was or wasn't. Certainly has a nice personality. But because he has a nice personality, I had a big question mark about would he be able to fire Bobby Slowick. It turns out the answer is a resounding yes. And I love that. I don't love that for Slowick. Slowick will find another job at some other place. He'll get his $1.5 million for this year. I love that D'Amico has that in him to make change where change is very obviously needed, in my opinion. Finishing up Chris's email, this is the move of a true competitor who put the team first over a personal connection. Agreed. In my eyes, this will be the most impactful move of the offseason, regardless of free agency, the draft, or trades. Let's fucking go. Have a great weekend. You have a great weekend as well, Chris, when the weekend rolls around. Will this be the most impactful move of the offseason? I think we got to wait and see who the replacement is first before I do that. And obviously, you got to see who they draft and do they make any big moves. You know, this time a year ago, Stephon Diggs was just a twinkle in all of our eyes. You know, and I know that ended up being not as impactful as we would have hoped because of the injury to Diggs. But the hope and the excitement that gave off, I think, would have exceeded firing an offensive coordinator. But if they hire Chip Kelly, you know, to me, it's about the sequence of moves. You know, like, we got to see where this plays out. But it's a very interesting question, Chris. Do you predict this is the most impactful move of the offseason? I may bounce that one off of Seth tomorrow and see what he says. Tomorrow being Thursday, we're recording this on a Wednesday, and that wraps things up. I always end up going longer than I think with you guys, and I'm totally cool with that. As long as you hit the subscribe button, as long as you give us a rating, as long as you give us a review, and as long as you tell a friend about the podcast. That's all I ask. Those are the only requests I have. Other than that, you live your life how you want to. You know what I mean? Like, you love who you want, live with who you want, eat what you want, exercise, don't exercise. I don't care. Just tell a friend about this here podcast. All right? So we will likely have another episode later this week. We're in between producers right now, so I'm getting with my new producer, Jared, to kind of figure out what the schedule is going to look like. But hopefully you enjoyed this mailbag. If there is a hire for the Texans at offensive coordinator, I can promise you an emergency episode for that. But we'll wait and see how long that takes. For Jared Rowland, my producer. Jared, I think I got your last name right. Who's getting this episode out to all of you and to all of you for listening. Thank you very much. This has been the Utopia Football Podcast. Have a great week, everybody.